Hey everyone, and thank you for tuning into my podcast. Before I jump straight into amazing conversation, I would love to say a massive thank you to our friend that introduced us. That means big, big, big thank you is going to Mike. I hope he's listening. And yeah, let me welcome Scott Fitzpatrick today with me. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, Alex. I'm looking forward to this. And he's a longtime friend of mine, Mike Beachyhead. So big shout out to him.
I met you and I had a really, really great conversation, or kind of like a start of conversation together. And I found very interesting what you do. That means I will be really happy if you can take us a little bit through your journey and tell us first more about what you do. And definitely we will jump in why and success and happiness and all kind of weird conversations later.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So, Alex, mate, I won't take you back too far, but way back in the day, I was a high school PE teacher. And I was playing a lot of sport. And for the Perth people, I'm a hockey player. And
I love hockey. Nice. Yeah.
And I was having trouble with all the training and trying to play representative sport. And what happened was it got me out of teaching and it got me into the financial services industry. Back in the day, they loved having hockey players, cricketers, and AFL players on their books. So that got me out of teaching and into a different industry. But luckily enough, we built a very successful business over 20 years in Fitzpatrick's, and we'll talk more about how and why we deal with clients. But I find myself teaching again now. So I have a business called the Significant Advice Network, and I'm teaching accountants, lawyers, and wealth advisors how to serve individuals and families better. That's in a nutshell.
I loved it. And that was probably the most interesting part, because you kind of started to more focus on just one part of the, I guess, target market, we can call it, or audience. And you realize, or you find out probably somewhere that you are really good in that. Like that's something that's your specialty. And I would love to probably touch base on that, because you have two businesses and both of them are successful. But I'm sure there was some kind of journey, you know, looking for that, looking how you want to do it, what you want to do. How did you arrive to that? Like, where this decision, you know, came up that you became again teacher?
Yes, well, there's lots of questions in that question, I think. Yeah. One is, when I was in the financial services industry, it was very much product driven, and I just found myself purposeless in that particular world. I went, there's got to be more than to this industry than that. And that's where, you know, I always think life's a bit like a pinball machine that you get bounced around by different people. And there's been a couple of significant people in that particular part of my career that really opened my eyes up to a different way that financial services could be. And I've had some great, you know, emotional intelligence coaches in my business over the years. And so, you know, I stumbled upon or happened upon this whole concept of, let's start to have a look at, for people, what does a great life look like for a lot of our clients? And I think, you know, we were one of the early adopters of spending a lot of time with clients, not so much worrying about the money, but just helping them get a really good grip on what does the next 5 or 10 years look like for them? What does a successful life look like? And I really love the Stephen Covey stuff, which is that talks about the four L's. You see, you're nodding your head. Around, you know, if you were sitting here in 10 years' time, tell me what, you know, how you want to live your life. Let me understand that. Let me understand the love in your life. What are all the relationships look like? If you had anything you want to go back and learn, what would that be? And then the last piece was your legacy piece about, if you're not here, what did it all mean? But also, whilst you're here, what did you want to impart? And I found these conversations gave great context to when we started talking about wealth management and marrying up those two things. So that was the start of the wealth management business. So we have a particular framework we really love to run for those clients around that, helping them get clear. Because let's face it, when have we all often sat down and had a look at what does the next 5 or 10 years look like? it's a rare occasion. And then answer your question, that skill set, the other professions are now starting to go, oh, we really need to get better at this. And so the opportunity was to start teaching the other professionals about how to have broader conversations with their clients.
Yeah.
And hence the second businesses has sprung up and running.
Yeah, that means basically while you were doing what you love to do and you're meeting with clients, you realize when you have more, I guess, not professional, maybe more personal conversation with them, you actually find more what they need, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I think there's this beautiful role emerging that, for want of a better word, I call it sense maker.
Yeah.
Sense of some of this stuff between in the financial services world. How do I make sense of all the money without a context? Like, it needs a context about where am I trying to get to in life. And I think there's a lot of value in helping people articulate that. It doesn't mean it's their plan for them, not mine, but having a framework to help clients articulate that's quite a special thing. And it's a really lovely role to play as well. What a valued role that you play there.
Yeah. I love those conversations. And it's interesting because when I ask people, when I tell people, you need to first know what you really want. Like, you need to know what you want. And it doesn't need to be exactly, you know, that you have all planned together, but really understanding what you want, because I believe that's happiness, you know, like that's fulfillment. And a lot of people don't have answer, even though they're very wealthy, but they don't know what to do next, what to do with money. And it's very interesting. Do you find it more like happens a lot?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're listening out there and you've got a lot of money or you don't have a lot of money, it doesn't really matter too much. You know, we've met some very, very unhappy people who are very, very wealthy.
Yeah.
But I think the start point is being really grounded in what's your current reality right now? All right, how are we going right now? And then looking to go in 10 years' time, what does a great life look like for you? And then I think part of this is creating some tension between the two.
Absolutely.
Right? Creative tension. Yeah, start moving towards that. And then, you know, we like to do things like we do a wheel of life with people. I think that's just a really powerful, easy tool of self-evaluation. How are we going in all these different elements of our life, from finances to relationships to career to money? How's our health going? All of those, you know, spiritual health and emotional health. How are we going with all these different areas?
Yeah.
I'm sure you do this in your work every day, but it's a really nice topic to bring into conversations with people to give it some context to where we're trying to get.
I was just going to say, it definitely gives you more context because you can see other areas of life, and usually that's the major problem, that people are not really balanced in that area. So when you go through hobbies and finance and relationships, career or business, it's just so many times just that one way, right? Like my finance or my business is great, but other than that, I don't have a really great relationship with my family or with my wife or husband. And I found it happen a lot. And I feel like, because you mentioned something about tension, like, you know, when people say, or they want to not go somewhere, but their reality right now is very different, and it creates a little bit of tension. But I think, like, what do you think? Like, because I feel like the tension is the resistance as well, right? Like, it's that self-sabotage resistance into like, now change has to happen. How do you deal with that? Because there is usually a lot of resistance probably, you know, towards what needs to happen.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the power in this process is it's the client's plan for them, not my plan for them.
Yeah, okay. Nice.
Well, I think there's power in that we've given you a framework for you to articulate where you're trying to get to in life, about what makes a great life for you. Now, we've had a conversation to say, here's your current reality, here's where we're trying to get to, and here are the steps now to start working towards that. So it's up for the client then to make a choice to go, well, is this what I really want?
Yeah, that means it's definitely lowering the resistance and seeing actually, am I willing to sacrifice this much because I want to go there or not? Yeah.
Yeah, there may be, there is some resistance or there's some emotional blocks, and maybe we need to bring some other people like yourself into the network to help them make these choices.
Definitely. Love that.
I think it is. It's, you know, I think the role of an advisor is to go, understand where you're up to now, where you're trying to get to, and then what other skills and capabilities do you need around you, Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, to give you the highest degree of predictability and least amount of risk in this. But I also like to think of that creative tension as like the rubber band between your forefinger and thumb, that what we're trying to say is we're really trying to extend this rubber band out, extend this rubber band out and create some tension between the two. Now, one of two things is going to happen. We're going to pull you towards your future, Well, your future is going to come back to you now.
Yeah.
So
That's interesting. I love the metaphor. Yeah.
Metaphor. Yeah. I think it's a nice one.
Yeah. Really good.
You know, people do that.
Yeah. Probably more personal part, because I would love to do talk a little bit about that inspiring part, right? Like you ran the business for, you said, more than 20 years, you know, that you have two businesses quite successful, and you're still working, you're still learning, you still want to see people, meet people, you're very active in business, and you really love to learn, what you mentioned before, right? And I think that keeps us young, I believe, because I love learning. But why you do what you do? Why? What is your driver and any internal inspiration?
That's a really good question. Well, okay, you put me on the spot now. So Fitzpatrick's, we had with 20 offices around the country, but I found myself, you know, the bits, what do I love to do? I love to teach people, teach, coach, mentor is the space I really like to play in. And that was the first part of, that was the first part of my development. But then about 5 years ago, private equity bought into our business, which released me. And it really made me think about, well, I could either retire, or I love the word refire. And for me, I went, that really resonates with me, the refire, because I felt like there was still some knowledge or wisdom or whatever it was that I wanted to impart. And that's when I came across this opportunity about coaching the other professionals in working, or what I call sitting on the family board. So part of it's legacy, but I do have a quest for knowledge. I've always, you know, I read 2 books a week.
Yeah, that's nice.
I love reading. I love my etching. I love drawing new concepts, practicing new concepts, and then turning that back into frameworks that I can then coach or teach. So, and yeah. You make it sound like I work a lot. I don't work a lot.
Yeah.
I've just come off a big road trip to Perth, where I started a new office over in Perth. But
congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Yes, took some planning. Got some really great people over there in your old hometown. That's me. I like to have a really good balance in life. I do my wheel of life normally every, you know, Sunday night, and I have a look at the different areas of my life to make sure I'm paying attention to them. So without sounding too corny, I really do like to live life on purpose.
Okay, I love that. And what is your purpose?
Well, if I look at this a different way, every year our families sit down together. I have, you know, which is a great thing to do with your children, but we all discuss our word for the year. So what's the one word you would put on a rock as the lens for you to make decisions that throughout the year?
Yeah, I love that. We have intention. We always
try to intention.
Say, yeah.
And a few years ago, my word was enrichment. A few years ago, it was joy. And the word for me this year is healthy.
Nice.
When I say healthy, it's about healthy relationship with myself, healthy relationship with my spouse, children, and the business, having a healthy business. So that's the lens that I'm, choose to look through.
And I love that you laugh when you said healthy relationship with myself. That means I noticed there is something that, you know, you need to work on. That was very interesting. Yeah.
Well, you know, we always laugh about you, which one rules, your inner critic or your inner fan.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, absolutely. That's the important distinction. And it's interesting how, because when you mentioned balanced life, you know, I'm thinking about people, they go through life, and after 20, 30 years of doing business, they're quite successful and they're quite happy. But on the other side, when you start to talk to them, they're not. Like, you realize that there is so much missing and so much other thing that they actually miss out on. And I love when you said that you try to really focus on having a balanced life. But I would probably ask, like, what, in simple words, I know we have different areas of life, but what is truly for you balanced life? What is the feeling of that?
Yeah, so, you know, a balanced life for me is this beautiful combination, I'd say. I love nature, so I'm a mad surfer, so time in the ocean. I really love the idea.
That's why Kulangata. So that's why Kulangata and Gold Coast, then. I understand now.
Yeah. And I really love that mantra of win the morning, win the day. So I do like to get up early. I like to have a stretch. I like to have a swim in the ocean. I like to mentally spend a lot of mental power early in the day up to about lunchtime. Yeah. And then, you know, the afternoons are more relaxing for me.
Yeah.
Farm property that I spend a lot of time on. And whilst it's not meditation, I do like to walk around and think about new concepts. So, you know, that's one of the things. Also, I like to talk to busy people or busy business owners about this concept of 4 and 40, which is 4 days a week, 40 weeks a year. Is
nice.
And having the fifth day is I'd not call it mental health day, but a fifth day to shut down a few of the screens and let your imagination run wild for a while.
I so much love that. Yeah, I really love that. And I have to agree. I'll probably ask, how long have you been doing that, you know, that morning setup for the day? Like, is that something that you practice a very long time?
Well, it's a habitual. So I think we're probably about 7 or 8 years in now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for me, it's physically staying, you know, fit. I'm spending a lot of time lately on my flexibility. My wife's dragged me,
right,
that's the wrong word, but got me into yin yoga.
Yes. Awesome. Right.
I'm always resistant to get there. And then once I've done it, I go, that was so good.
Yeah. And it is absolutely. I was actually, because I'm a yoga teacher, that was the kind of first thing when I was arriving to Australia. I said, I need to do my course so I can do something before I find the job. And it was interesting kind of like leaning into that slowly, because before it was just for making money, but now I really love that. And I see how you, when you're actually doing any pose in yoga, how it's actually it's shrinking and actually exploding, you know, the energy, and it's actually recalibrating all your energy points. And I feel fantastic. Like, the yoga is amazing.
It is. And, you know, I think it's a generalization, but for men, sometimes we struggle with the idea of going to yoga.
Yeah.
But I can only hope I'm influencing some of your listeners. If you're a professional out there working long hours, then yoga is just so revitalizing for you. You get shut down a few screens in your head and you have a fantastic night's sleep, and the world's a better place after it. So you know, I'm sort of quite intentional around my health and activity. And I suppose this is what we coach and teach people, is around what I call, you know, your third place. And just to give you, by way of example, I did a speech to 50 partners of a legal firm the other day. And we talk about this concept of home or work. There's only two spaces. And I go, no. There's a third space, which is, you know, I call it your green space or third place, which is, where do you go to revitalize? And for all these people who are busy, they only ever have this concept of home or work, home life or work life. And absolutely. So it's like, how do we get this into your diary?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Without feeling guilty.
Yeah, I think that's the problem that a lot of people find. When you said at the beginning, you know, relationship with myself, like, I'm going to improve that, because we all should improve that. Because what happens when we spend time with ourselves and doing something for ourselves, we always feel guilty, because all of us, we try to making other people happy instead of, you know, trying to start with ourselves. But I think it's such a broad and such an important topic. I will probably suggest, I don't know if that's your experience as well, but when you do it actually 2 weeks every day, you just really try to keep that routine for 2-3 weeks, then you realize how different you feel during the day. And you started to have that big, big reward, the emotional reward from actually doing something for yourself. And I found that my days are totally different. I don't have any stress. Everything changes and everything is calmer. And I guess I can be more present. So I don't know. What is your experience?
No, absolutely. And it's like, you know, I think it was it 21? You have to do something 21 times before it becomes a habit.
But yeah.
Also, I think during that 2-week period, the guilt and resentment of yourself drops away.
Yeah.
And you have the additional benefits of you are starting to feel better.
Yeah.
You've got more energy. You know, I talk to people about, you know, some of my clients. I say, look, you turn up, and I'll just use the men as an example, you turn up as a better person, you turn up as a better husband, a better father, a better person at work, you've got more energy.
Yeah.
You include yourself in your own life. And I think it's a struggle for many people to actually, and for me, it works really well to do it first thing in the morning. I know if I wait till the afternoon, it'll never get done. I'll come in, sit down on the lounge, and that's the end of it. Yeah. It's a struggle for many people out there to put themselves first into their diaries, not last.
Yeah, and I love that. And exactly, morning is amazing. And you're also meeting different people, you know, when you're running or walking on the beach. I just love the feel of that, just feeling and seeing the sunrise. And people are different. People are always happy in the morning. Everybody says, you know, and just gives you a little bit more energy for the day. And yeah, I just love that connection. And with yoga, I agree. We definitely should get some men into yoga, because I think stretching, I always said, if you're flexible enough physically, you also have more flexible mind. And it really, truly helps, because it's kind of part of probably meditation and breathing that happen, you know, during the yoga. But probably I will go back to your, because I love the way you expressing yourself from perspective of how you live, how balanced your life is. And it seems to be like, to me, this is how people should run business, right? They should have their morning, they should have their meditation, yoga, run, whatever is the movement, you know, swimming in the ocean, just having something for themselves after that, being, you know, in a business and do, like you said, some mental work, you know, like you really try to focus that first few hours of the day and having a little bit relaxed afternoon. I think that will be like perfect blueprint for running business, right? Probably it wasn't always like that, I believe.
No, there's times where it takes lots of energy and lots of time away. You know, it's very, very easy to fall. You know, I still find myself like, I've just done a very, you know, that long trip to Perth and back, and you can fall out of balance very, very quickly. But I think it's this consciously looking, you know, I've talked to people about, you know, are you running your diary or is your diary running you?
Yeah, great question.
I think martyrs the too strong a word, but sometimes we're martyrs to our business. And I really think that there's some really easy, you know, ways to, or skills you can put into your life. Like, I really like to do it on a Sunday night. I like to look at my diary and go, what have I got coming up for the next week or two? Have I put myself first or last here? Other important things to put into my diary. And I think quite often, I learned this beautiful term last year, is that you end up majoring in minor things.
That happened, right? It happens sometimes.
It does happen sometimes. And I think just, the Stephen Covey concept of putting the big rocks in first.
Yeah, I would love to ask what success means to you.
Well, that's another interesting question. What does success mean to me? I think for me, you know, there's six different forms of success. I go, well, what is, you know, there's the monetary value of success, which I don't rate too high. I look at more about what does a successful life look like?
Yeah. And
am I working toward a successful life? Yeah, I don't, I think I'm very, very fortunate, and I'm, you know, very grateful for the life I have, but I feel like I've been working towards that for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So success for me is about maintaining and growing what I've already created. And I think most of that is non-financial stuff. Certainly it's great to be financially okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And that helps me help other people from a philanthropic point of view. But I think, you know, what does success look like to me? Happy family, happy life. I'm happy with my career. I've got mental stimulation. Physically, I feel great. I'll round all that up together to go, that's a successful life to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably I will ask you another question, tricky one maybe, but because you mentioned, you know, the word happiness, and I would like to know what is that for you? Like what actually a lot of people are seeking for happiness, right? Like they think like, I want to be happy. But I believe, to me, I believe that is just decision, right? Like it's decision to make, like we can be happy in 1 second, but people put so much value on happiness. And you mentioned as well, you know, just to a successful life is basically being happy or having a happy life. That means what is that for you?
Well, you know, that's good again, because a couple of years ago, the word I put on my rock for the year was joy.
Yeah.
Joy's not happy. Joy can be doing some tough things. You know, I like to live my life. I call it ex-frightened.
Okay, I like that word.
Excited. I like to be excited and frightened at the same time.
Yeah.
So I like to put myself into positions where I'm out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, and I think that's the word. Yeah, definitely, that you feel comfortable to be uncomfortable.
That's it. Yeah. I like that. I don't like being in a... Well, we all know there's not much growth occurs while you're sitting in your comfort zone. So, yeah. Over time, I'm quite happy to step into uncomfortable situations or start off a new business or, make what I call a bold call. So ringing up somebody and having a chat with them that you'd normally not do it. So, you know, my fear of rejection is very low. What was back to your question? Was it what was?
Happiness. Like what does that actually
mean? Yeah, I think... And you know, as you know, your emotions come and go and change.
Yeah,
all the emotions they're all relevant. So I don't find myself wanting to be, you know, glad, walking around glad all day long.
Yeah, I remember that from your podcast. Yeah, I love that, being glad.
No, glad, scared. You know, the four major emotions.
Yeah,
so whilst glad is it's a nice to have. I certainly don't sit here and say I'm glad 24/7. But I think happiness for me is that at the end of the day, I'm content with what's going on. What my personal growth, my physical health, relationships with my wife, are they all improving? Yeah, and I think it's okay. You know, I'm not sitting here saying my life's perfect. The amount of rabbit holes and mistakes I've made and, you know, poor relationships, you know, goodness, you learn something. You learn a lot out of those ones.
Well, do you have an example? I would love to hear some funny things.
Well, you know, I've had made some really poor decisions in business, where I brought on partners into the business and I brought them on for the wrong reasons. And then how do you unwind those relationships? And then you look back in 5 years post that, you go, what was I even thinking? What was I trying to do that for? It was for all the wrong reasons. Maybe my communication skills have also improved over the years. Maybe they weren't so good 5 or 6 years ago. So I think, you know, there's lots of different rabbit holes that we've been down, whether it's decisions we've made, and that's then how do you, you know, give yourself a little uppercut and then move on, learn from it and move on rather than hang on to that bad decision for too long.
Absolutely. And I can see the growth there, right? Because when we make decision in business and it's not pretty much the best, or we get together with some people, even though we have the intuition, and sometimes, you know, we kind of know, like, this is probably not the right, but we are like, yeah, let's do it. Yep. And I think that's another growth or part where I believe we grow into that intuition, that we actually listening more that what we truly feel. Because I believe it's very important, especially in business. So many times, you know, logical decision is actually wrong decision. Sometimes something that is not logical makes so much sense at the end. I mean, so probably say that growth probably through these kind of mistakes or failures, I think everybody experience in the business especially. And I believe, to me, emotional intelligence or emotional fitness is so important, probably the most important part of any conversation from today on. Be happy people, and it really helps to grow business and really help people to connect and understand the other person. Where do you see emotional fitness, or how do you see this kind of concept, I would say?
Yeah, so that's another big question. Is if I just go back really quickly that about business decisions, quite often, you're right. Logically, we might make a decision, but we haven't thought about the cultural impact of those decisions. These decisions marry in with the rest of the people, which are normally, you know, most businesses are full of people. That's, you know, so we need to be, you know, I think people overlook the cultural aspect of business. Yeah.
I always explain that it's almost like we made decision on quantitative part, like that's the logical, and we totally miss the qualitative part of the decision. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, that doesn't lead to, that doesn't lead to such a healthy future for that business.
I know about that. Come on, I made a few of them.
Well, we all have. We all have. And, you know, a lot of businesses are in partnerships. A lot of businesses deal with people. And I just made a decision many, many years ago that I was going to be in a people business. I wanted to be in a relationship business.
Yeah.
So I thought it would make a lot of sense to bring, it wasn't even a term then, but I would bring a relationship coach into the business to help us learn more about people skills. You know, it wasn't a sales trick. It was just about, you know, if we're going to be in relationship with our clients and people who send us clients, well, surely shouldn't we, you know, sharpen the axe, so to speak, and get better and better and better at people skills and tiptoe into this world of emotional intelligence. Now, for the guys listening, quite often the ladies and I have a much better emotional vocabulary.
I may say generalizing.
But yeah. There's that beautiful skit of two guys sitting in a bar talking, and one guy says to the other guy, "Gee, Shane Warne played cricket well today." And the other guy goes, "Yeah, he's just a fantastic bowler." And then beside them are these two thought bubbles. One says, "Jenny left me. I'm a quivering mess. Please hold me, my loving friend." And the other thought bubble is with the other partner going, "You know, you're my lifelong friend. I wish I could, you know, support you in this situation." But it's a nice analogy for Australian men and emotional vocabulary.
Yeah, expressing themselves. Language, totally.
So we brought an emotional intelligence coach into the business to help us train with all of this, giving us an emotional vocabulary, giving us some depth around different emotional intelligence models, how to support people, because quite often in this work that we're all doing, there's some tension in the room. And how do we deal with tension? How do we deal with tears? How do we deal with emotion?
Oh, that's a scary thing for a lot of people. I agree.
Yeah, and to give us all some skills and some training, and it's something that can be taught, which is what I love. Some people are naturally good at it, but it's a skill that can be taught.
Yeah, and absolutely. Honestly, I can see that from the coaching perspective. When I started my journey and, you know, started with other coaches, like we were working together and exercising coaching, you know, trying to do some sessions with each other. And you can see it, like how your subconscious is holding you back to don't go too deep because you know the person will cry. And, you know, you need to slowly develop that skill. I believe that's all art and training and trying and actually experiencing that, because it is a lot when we need to hold a space for someone and we were never taught how to do it or we never tried. That means it can be really shock for a lot of people, but I guess that's reality. We are human beings and we have emotions. And if you are good in conversations, you can have really deep conversations. And I think that's the probably most people looking for that now, just to have that real deep real conversations. It's not the shallow one, transactional, and just, you know, meet people and thinking, what can I get here? It's not anymore fashion. Like, that's old. I think the world moved a little further.
Yeah, I even think it's been accelerated post-COVID. People are after reality. And I really like, I think I did talk to you about that model, that PIES model, where there's four different types of conversation. So we can have a political conversation, we can have an intellectual conversation, we can have an emotional conversation, we can have a spiritual conversation. Mm. And I think all four are just as important as each other, whereas I think previous to this, it was mainly an intellectual conversation that we were having with people.
Absolutely. And the word spiritual is so far away still from a lot of people, and it's still a little bit of stigma around it.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to think, and you're right, there is some stigma around it, but I think good advisors or good communicators can go between political and intellectual and emotional and spiritual and work their way up or work their way down. And for me, spiritual is like, what's the fire in your belly? What's your passion? What are you passionate about? What gets you out of bed in the morning? That's how I'll explain that one.
Yeah. But before I will let you go, I would love to ask, what's next for Scott?
What's next? Well, I've got this business now where I'm teaching. Well, let's start with, there's quite a lot of business owners out there or people out there who need a professional best friend, or what I call a sounding board. You know, someone they can talk to about their business, partner, kids, you know, strategy, all of those types of things. So I'm quite passionate about that role. I'm quite passionate about teaching people that role. how to be professional best friend, right through to what I call sitting on the family board. Yeah. So I'm setting that up around the country as we speak. So Gold Coast up and running, Perth last week it's up and running, and Sydney and Brisbane are coming through. So yeah, I think that's I can see that being my next chapter of work for the next 3 to 5 years. I've done lots of writing and videos and recording, and that's it seems to be just a really lovely avenue for me creatively to work on new concepts and then work out how to teach it. And you know, my children are all adults, so there's still a fair bit of time, you know, that we're young adults, I call them, running around with them. Yeah, a little bit of travel, a little bit of surfing.
Nice
and rounded.
That sounds perfect. And if you can give away one advice for advisors, let's talk about advisors and people actually you work with. If you can give them one thing that is really, really important for their career, what it would be?
Well, I think, you know, I think, well, for advisors, I think, you know, a couple of things come up for me straight away. Number one, you need to keep thinking into the future about what are the future services your clients are after.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm passionate about the advisors of the future are very, very good with people. They've got excellent people skills and can help clients envision a life for themselves, help them articulate what makes a great life. So I think that's a really important thing. And I think secondly, well, it's in line with that. Secondly is, you know, you know, ChatGPT and all the rest of it, these people skills are only going to be magnified in terms of the need that we're creating. I can get technical anywhere. I can look it up on the internet, any technical thing I need to know. What I can't get is where technical meets the emotional.
Absolutely.
How does it impact my life? And I think that's where people are after this role of sense maker, someone to help make sense of all of this. Passionate about saying to a young advisor, step into this area very, very quickly.
Thank you so much for that. And lastly, I would probably need to ask if people want to connect with you, where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. That's normally the easiest way to find me, under Scott Fitzpatrick, or the SAN, Significant Advice Network.
Nice.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I know we went a little bit over time, but I really, really value our conversation. But thank you so much for your time. I really value that. And I wish you amazing week.
Thanks, Alex. It's been fantastic. Appreciate it.